WFMP 88.7 Rosendale, the cutting edge of the Hudson Valley, brings you exclusively today's best music.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the CT Sportscast. I am your host, Colin Buchanan, and I'm here with my co-host,
Tim B.
Well, today is, obviously yesterday was May the 4th, so May the 4th be with you all. Also, it is Revenge of the 5th. These are all Star Wars references, if anybody knows or cares or anything.
Yep.
But today is a very, very sad day. As for me as a senior, this is going to be my last show.
No.
I mean, I started this back in, I actually officially started doing this back at the beginning of the semester, and then kind of just went through the entire semester like in a snap of a finger.
Yeah, it's been going by so fast, man. It's been a little cray-cray, if you could say.
Oh, no, absolutely. But we will give you a very, very good show today as we officially are out of the first round of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
We have our second round matchups as, of course, my team and Tim's team both advanced in the playoffs.
Your team just barely got by.
But listen, we got it done. That's all that matters.
Uh-huh. But you guys, we'll get into it. But you guys do have a bit of a tough matchup coming
your way. Oh, yeah, no. I actually think you're actually going to be really surprised with what I have to say for that series. So, okay. But all in all, let's give you a real recap real quick. So the first round matchups, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they swept the Miami Heat. The Boston Celtics defeated the Orlando Magic in 5 games. Mm-hmm. The New York Knicks defeated the Detroit Pistons in six games.
Which is what I predicted, by the way.
Well, I predicted 7, so. Well, and then the Indiana Pacers defeated the Milwaukee Bucks in 5 games. That is the Eastern Conference. While as in the West, the Oklahoma City Thunder swept the Memphis Grizzlies. The 2-7 matchup, which went 7 games as the Golden State Warriors defeated them. The 3-6 matchup, which was the LA Lakers versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the Minnesota Timberwolves defeated the LA Lakers in 5 games. And the 4-5 matchup, which I was really, really stoked about and I'm very upset about, is that the LA Clippers lost to the Denver Nuggets in a hard-fought 7-game series.
Yeah, it was a really tough matchup, battle, you know. It was tough for them to get through that, but, you know, Denver prevailed. Westbrook brought the energy, and it really just went off from there.
No, absolutely. So me and Tim, we both actually did both. So the way that we're going to break down each series is I got 2 series, he's got 2 series, we'll both break them down, and then we'll give you what we think is going to happen in both series, despite the fact that one already happened yesterday, as the Indiana Pacers defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers on Sunday. I believe the first two games, which is between the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks, is tonight. And the Denver Nuggets versus the Oklahoma City Thunder is at 9:30.
Cool. So, want to just get right into it?
Yeah, no, we can get right into it. So, I will actually go first. The first series that I'm going to discuss is the matchup that actually has already started. The Indiana Pacers, who were the 4th seed, versus the number 1 seeded Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, bit of an upset last night.
Yep, so originally, when I first predicted like how the series was going to go, I thought it was going to be a 5-game series. I'm changing that to 6 games. I think, well, obviously, it's going to be Cavs in 6. I think this is going to be a very, very, you know what I feel like this matchup is going to be like? I feel like this matchup is going to be like what the Knicks and the Pistons series was.
It kind of feels just from that first game, it feels just like the when the Pacers faced the Knicks last year, too, honestly. Because, I mean, for some whatever reason, their three-point shooting has just, like, been lights out.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I mean, so in the season series matchup, the Pacers won the series 3-1. Actually, fun fact, actually, all the games that they versed each other were all in the second half except for the first game, which was back in January. Huh. The rest of them happened in about a less than a two about a month and a half span when they versed each other. But here are some key factors going into this series, obviously from a player standpoint. So Tyrese Haliburton averages 12.5 points per game while shooting 30.8% from the field, from three-point range, 42.9% from field goal, and 75% from the free throw line. Mm. Now, I get it. He had a fantastic series against Milwaukee and everything, but just based on those numbers during the regular season, that concerns me. If a guy who was listed as the most overrated player in basketball, and he showed and he proved to everybody that he isn't overrated, and yet these are the stats against one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, that concerns me. But on the consolation, the only thing that I can defend with Haliburton is that he's got other guys around in which that can support him, such as Benedict Mathurin, Andrew Newhard, his co-star in Pascal Siakam, and then he also has Miles Turner.
Yeah.
So if Haliburton does those averages for the playoffs, Siakam can give you 25, Nembhard can give you 20, Benedict Mathurin can give you 25. So there is a good supporting cast in which Haliburton won't get hit hard, but at the same time, he is going to get hit hard because he is the best player on this team.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of shooters, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, he'll dish the ball out, no, without a doubt. But when you are the best player, you have to do it on both ends. You have to do it from the distributing end and from the scoring end. And if Haliburton averages 18 points, maybe almost 20, then maybe the series can go seven games. Because with the way that they played in game one, and then if Haliburton has better stats for this series, then I think this can go seven games.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, they've clearly... Sorry, just yawning. But clearly they've shown some poise. I mean, they just... Again, it's just like they pass the ball around, they get guys wide open, and they hit their shots. It's really as simple as that.
Absolutely.
And it's literally every man on the floor is capable of doing that. So it's like just a combination of all those things that allows them to be deadly at times. But yeah, I agree with how I think ultimately Cleveland should be able to win it out. But yeah, definitely.
And then another key factor of player for this series, I was going to do three players, but I think two would probably be the better substantial idea.
Yeah.
Pascal Siakam. And when I looked at these stats for these guys against one another, it's like a lopsided thing, and it's crazy. Like, Siakam averaged 17 a game, which was actually first among the team against the Cavaliers during the regular season. His field goal percentage was a 46.8, which is actually pretty good. His three-point percentage is very concerning at 33%, but he's known to be a liability when it comes to that, especially during the playoffs. And his two-point percentage, which I actually think is really, really concerning, he's only at a 54%. Usually guys who are efficient shooters shoot around 65 to 75%. So that's one thing that really concerns me. But in addition to that, what I was also going to go off on is that this Pacers team, I really thought was going to be just like last season. Like, it was going to be a team that was going to surprise everybody, in which it was going to maybe give the possibility of them making another conference finals run. Could that happen? It's quite possible. It's not impossible. But at the same time, when you really look at how this team is, like, I mean, from the offensive end, like, they were 7th in the league in scoring, while their teams per game was at 115, which was 17th in the league, while their point differential was at a 2.2, which was in the top 15. The only other thing that also was really big benefactor for this series is that their field goal percentage in total was 49% during the regular season, while their three-point percentage was ninth. And in addition to that, they are actually leading the playoffs right now as a team in three-point percentage at 41%. In addition to that, their opponent's three-point percentage is ninth, which is 35%. Hmm. And to be honest with you, the Cavaliers aren't really the type of team that will shoot the ball. I mean, they really don't have threatening guys.
Got some guys.
Yeah, their most threatening shooters are probably Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Max Strus, and Sam Merrill. Other than that, nobody really else can shoot the ball. I mean, Mobley, he'll go out there.
Mobley can score, though.
He can't
really shoot the three very well, but like he's definitely elevated his scoring game a lot this season.
Oh, no, 100%. Sure. No, I totally agree. And one of the other bigger factors as far as this series goes, in addition to that, is their matchups against one another. I mean, especially for the fact that they are known to give up a lot of points, because I think at some point during the season, they actually averaged the highest points per game during the regular season.
Hmm.
I mean, just for Cleveland alone, they gave them, field goal percentage-wise, they were, oh, wow, they're not even, wow. They averaged 42% from the field against them this season. So that is a huge reason why I think they took game one. Do I think this momentum will keep going? Absolutely. I mean, do I have a fear that Cleveland could get shut down, in which could cause them to lose this series? Absolutely. Especially for the fact that you're only shooting 42% against this team. That's something that people really need to look into.
So yeah.
That's a better factor. But on Cleveland's end, this is what I mean, like, on how like lopsided this is. Donovan Mitchell led the team in scoring with 27 a game, shot 47.5% from the field, 37.5 from three, and he took 20 shots per game. Now, obviously, that's going to increase when he versus Indiana. Now, the other co-star, I was going to do Garland, but he didn't play in game one because of a toe injury, and I honestly feel that Mobley is a bigger impact of a player than Garland is. So,
right.
But I mean, these are unbelievable stats by Evan Mobley. 19 a game while shooting 63% from the field. 66% from three, as he only attempts three per game. 75% from the free throw line, which could be a liability down the stretch.
His
2-point percentage is 62.5. I mean, the guy also, he averaged 19 a game and 12 rebounds, and 11 of those rebounds were defensive rebounds, which tells me actually that maybe size is going to matter in this series, especially for the fact that Indiana, who has Miles Turner, Obi Toppin, Aaron Nesmith, a lot of guys that are tall, agile, and have high verticals, they will get those rebounds. So I think another key factor is that Evan Mobley is going to have to get really physical, and he's going to have to get offensive rebounds, because you can't just rely on Jared Allen to get you 12 rebounds, and 9 of those are offensive. Like, Mobley's got to do his end.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember when they faced the Knicks in that playoff series a couple years ago. I guess a few years ago now? Whatever.
It was last year. No,
2 years
2023.
Yeah. The main reason they lost that series really was, like, second-chance points, offensive rebounds that they gave up to the Knicks so much. And, yeah, so that's something they got to make sure they can do with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. But I think they'll be able to do that. I mean, besides Miles Turner, I think, you know, they kind of have a double big sort of thing. So, like, I feel like that works well for them overall.
I mean, and especially on the numbers on their end against the Pacers.
Uh-huh.
Defensively, it's 45% from the field, which is a little bit better than Indiana is. But in addition to that, their three-point percentage, actually, in addition to that, it's actually in the bottom five. They give them 32%. So they're more better a perimeter defensively rather than just in general. I think that actually plays a bigger key factor, because I actually think the Pacers have better shooters in this series than Cleveland does. But I think defensively, when you look at the numbers, I actually think Indiana is the better team defensively. And
oh, really?
I think they are the deeper team. But the better players is what's going to matter in this series, too.
Mm.
And I think Cleveland has the better players. So that's why I'm going to go with my gut feeling. I'm going to say that this is going to be a very, very good six-game series.
Yeah, definitely. I think it will end up being pretty competitive. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that series.
Yep. So that is my first prediction as far as the second round matchup between the Indiana Pacers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Tim will go next with his series that he's going to do, and which one would you like to do, my friend?
I might as well start with the Knicks versus the Celtics. I think that's a pretty pretty notable one for sure. Now, okay, I'll just be blunt. The Knicks are probably not going to win this series.
No, really?
I mean...
What a shocker.
The betting odds are all against them. They are supreme underdogs in this series. And, you know, that has a lot to do with the fact that they were not able to beat the Celtics, although they did come very close in the final game against them. Celtics had a little bit, some injuries here and there, but everyone's going to be playing. So, you know, now the big thing is definitely like, how will they approach? I think if the Knicks do everything they possibly can right at a consistent basis and like everything goes their way, that would be the only way I could see them even possibly winning the series, to be honest. They did show, like, with Mitchell Robinson, they are much more capable of getting there. Because the only time Mitchell Robinson was able to play was that very last matchup against them. So that's certainly a factor to look at. But, you know, the Celtics, the name of their game is three-point shooting. Like, just every player is able to shoot threes. And they do it, pretty, like, at a ridiculous volume. And the Knicks against the Pistons, that was a pretty gritty series, very emotional. I think that the Knicks can certainly, they certainly have a lot of three-point shooting, but, you know, hasn't been fully hitting. The biggest thing for me, I think, is they really need to make Cat shoot more threes. Like, that is such, he can shoot it so well. He's your best three-point shooter, and he's only attempting around four threes a game. Like, he can drive well and he can score in the paint well. Like, he's certainly capable of that. And, you know, doesn't mean he has to stop doing that. But he shoots the three ball so well. Like, I just don't understand why they haven't utilized this skill set from him to the fullest potential. And, you know, part of that is also how defenses, like, force him to not take shots and stuff. But he has a really long range, kind of like Porzingis in a way, too.
I think, to go off on what you were saying for that, is the fact that I think the biggest benefactor is that he's your only reliable big man out there on the floor. I mean, Mitchell Robinson, he's still recovering from his ankle surgery.
Well,
Precious Achiuwa, where the hell has he been?
Well, I mean, he's just out of the rotation. He can kind of be an unreliable asset at times. He's a little all over the place. Although, considering, I would say overall, you have a bit of a bigger lineup. It's certainly not out of the question to maybe put him in there occasionally. Maybe even Huck Porty. I mean, he was honestly really good in the, like, some of the games he played, even though he got injured. But Mitchell Robinson, he did honestly a pretty good job. He's definitely, yeah, not like completely 100%, but I'd say he's pretty close there. He could block shots. He's a good defender still. Like, that is the name of his game. He can rebound.
Now, I actually have a very, very interesting question for you. But that is going to have to be on hold as we will take a little short break and get right back into it.
Yeah.
What's up? It's John Roy. I'm a music director on the e-board at WFNP. I coordinate music events, review music on the station's website, and run the recording studio on the fourth floor of the sub. Check out our music and concert reviews at WFNP.org. Want to use a recording studio and learn how to record live? Scan the QR codes on the doors of the studio and sound booth and get in contact with me for a time. Thanks for tuning in to WFNP New Paltz.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
And we're back.
We're back.
So,
what's this question you got for me?
My question is, who are you going to have guarding Tatum? Are you going to have OG guard him?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Are you going to have Mikal guard him?
Totally OG. OG's the bigger body.
Interesting.
I'd say overall, especially with how, like, you know, Brown has been kind of on the, you know, he's been a little injured. He hasn't been 100% himself. I think it's better to put Mikal on there, on him. And especially when you saw how OG defended Cunningham overall this series in the Pistons matchup. Because, I mean, he brought his, it was one of the most high volume amount of matchups in all first rounds. And he only made Cunningham shoot around like 42% overall. When, like, I'm just every time he was guarded by Ananobi, which is pretty good, all things considered. So, you definitely, he's your best overall defender as a wing guard, so you definitely want OG on Tatum. And Tatum's doing a really amazing job scoring and stuff, too, so, you know, definitely need him on that.
I hate to say this, but I disagree with you. I think
not want Mikal on. Trust me.
He's much longer. He has much longer arms.
But he does not have the body. Mikal has had this issue throughout the season where he's just is not able, even though he is fast, he's just a bit too, he just does not have the weight. And he just does not have the muscle, I mean. And sometimes he falls behind screens and that can leave guys open. And OG's way better at... OG has extremely long arms, too, by the way. I mean, he can really... He has a really wide span. And something that OG does that I find kind of interesting is kind of does this weird, like, crab walk sometimes. Which really spreads himself out. And that allows him to get steals really easily. And, you know, he's a big dude. Like, I mean, he's kind of like a... I'm not saying he's Kawhi, but he is Kawhi-esque in a sense.
I know what you mean. I hear what you're saying.
I think you just need him on a guy like Tatum. So that I think that is just the way it has to be. Now with in terms of matchups with a Cat, you know, he is not a great defender, and something he needs to do is we just cannot leave Porzingis open, which was such a big issue in the last matchup, because just keep leaving him wide open, and he has a super long range because of how tall he is. So, like, he could just shoot, and he made 8 threes in the last matchup. He made over 8 threes.
Well, the issue is that this is, of course, going back to Thibodeau's Bulls days.
Too much drop coverage sometimes.
Exactly, but also Thibodeau has had a long history in relying on his better players to do the scoring and everything, and not forget about, like, the matchup situations. He wants to go out there and win ball games and have the best lineups possible. I feel like sometimes he's being forced on to put in subs. Like, I'm not even kidding with you. I wouldn't be surprised if 4 out of the 5 guys in that series lead... 4 out of the 5 guys that play in that series, I wouldn't be surprised if 4 of them are among the top 10 in players who play over 35 minutes. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, totally. But, like, I also... Excuse me. I think, you know, another thing they... another angle they should do is have the Cat Mitchell Robinson lineup have double bigs, double centers. Because they haven't done a ton, but when they do, it certainly seems to work well. Because you have the offensive cat, and then you have the defense of Mitchell Robinson. And that just works. I think it's a great formula that they should really use for this series. Because I think overall, you have a much bigger team just physically in the Celtics. They just have a lot of big... They got Al Horford. They got Porzingis. They got Tatum. They got Jaylen Brown. And even Jrue Holiday is fairly big for a point guard, all things considered. So, like, I mean, you just have a lot of, like, pretty tall dudes for their positions. So you really need to match up with that and not allow guys to get in the post easily and score. Also, honestly, I think Brunson, you know, he's not a defender he's not a great defender. I'm not saying that, but, like, he's top five in drawing charges. And honestly, he guarded Holiday pretty well, all things considered. Now, with everything being said about that, I would say most likely the Celtics come out on top. It would take a lot of things to go right for the Knicks to win out this series. As a fan, I would want them to win, of course. But as a journalist, professional journalist, not actually. But for this podcast, I would have to be honest and say the Celtics will probably win. But I think it will be more competitive than a lot of people expect it to be, at the very least. I think the Knicks can honestly squeeze this out into six games. Honestly, I think they're totally capable of that. Doesn't mean they're going to win at all overall, but I mean, crazier things have happened, honestly.
I think the only way this could go six games is the same way the Pacers series is going to go. You have to steal game one.
I want that to happen. And hey, who knows? Maybe the Knicks can completely pull it out and win it. I don't know how that's going to happen, but it could. You never know.
Yep.
Those are my thoughts on that series.
So, I'm going to give you my quick thoughts.
Okay.
I kind of went based off mostly on the regular season, despite the fact that the Knicks are defeatless against top teams.
And also, they had a losing record against the Pistons, too, in the regular season, too. So
that is true.
It's not always a definitive thing.
My biggest concern for this series, I think, is the fact that Thibodeau is going to tire his team out and they're not just going to have enough gas. The way this team is constructed, I think rotational-wise, starting lineup-wise, I think it's phenomenal. You just need... You know what this needs? This needs to be, like, a combination of, like, this year's Knicks team and then have a Pacers bench.
Yeah, I mean, that would be nice. I don't know how exactly they go about that. Actually, honestly, next year, I think you might want to have a lot of those rookies they got this year. Tyler Kolek, I think, has a lot of great potential as a passer. Huck Porty was actually really great in the minutes he got. He was actually in the rotation for a bit until he got an injury. And honestly, I don't really know what you can get out of, what's the dude's name?
Precious Achiuwa?
No, not Achiuwa. The other rookie they had drafted. He was a late first rounder.
I do not know.
He's French. Whatever his name is. I forget your name. I honestly think it's worth taking a chance on those guys, especially Kolek and Huck Porty, because those guys actually show a lot of potential in being pretty solid players, I think. Kolek's got a great passing game, and Huck Porty can actually defend and moves. He was the very last pick of the NBA draft, and he actually showed to be a pretty effective player overall in terms of defending and actually posting up and having some, like, dribbling moves and stuff and post-up moves.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think development is going to be the correct direction at the state that they're in
now.
Not
completely.
I'll tell you this. The best example I can actually give you is Cleveland. In 2022, like they won 44 games and just missed the playoffs. But they're young guys. Then the next season they made the playoffs, lost in the first round.
They didn't lose the first round.
No, that in 2023 they lost to the Knicks.
Oh, you're talking about? Sorry, I thought you were talking about the Knicks. No. Sorry. I got
distracted. And then in 2024, they lost in the second round.
Yeah.
And now there's a legit chance that they'll probably make it to the conference finals for the first time since 2018.
Yeah, it's
and
a lot.
With the Knicks, the thing is but here's what I was saying. Here's to get to my point. They developed all those guys. They developed Mobley. They developed Jared Allen because he was still young when they acquired him. They developed Isaac Okoro. They developed Darius Garland. So they developed all these guys, and now look at what they've turned into.
Yeah.
And I think if that was the direction that the Knicks were going to go, this window for them, I probably say, is probably going to be until the end of the decade, I probably say. I mean, and I just said four seasons right there. So, if the way that this season's going to go and you're going to develop these guys, you're going to be competing for championship or be what the Cavs are in 2028 or something like that.
And I mean, this is a fairly young team, all things considered. You only have, like, two guys that are... you only have, besides TJ Warren. Did I say his name right?
Yeah, TJ Warren.
Besides that guy, who's 40 years old, you have a really young team overall, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, more so, everyone's around the 27, 20, like, 29 age, honestly. So, like, you got a fairly decently young team, all things considered.
I get that, but...
Your championship window's not huge, but it's also not small.
Yes, but in addition to that, the difference between the Cavaliers and the Knicks is that the Knicks, they got these guys... at the mid age of the 20s, while as if for the Cleveland Cavaliers, all these guys were 21, 22 years old, and now they're just about to get into the prime of their years. While once when Brunson and all of them get up in age, then their window is going to start to kind of close and everything. So, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this team will. I think they'll get there someday.
I honestly think they do. If the
Brunson's perseverance as a player himself individually, I think honestly, I think 1 year they could have like a Dirk Dallas run 1 year where Brunson just completely goes all out. Because I mean, hey, that team was not seen as the championship winner, and they pulled it out in the end. Surprisingly,
I think if Brunson was to do that.
He's already putting numbers up in the playoffs that haven't been.
That's
done
what I'm
since
saying.
Jordan.
Like, I think if he was to do that, I think it would be for this playoff.
Actually, yeah, honestly, this playoffs it could be
only
the one
because
for that
he would have to defeat the Celtics, and then he would have to defeat the Cavaliers,
and then you would have most likely, we don't know yet, but
would
most
be OKC,
likely, yeah, which would be like all the top three teams that you
honestly
lost the
if you really
season.
Think about it, I get it.
That would be the toughest playoff thing.
Oh,
if you
100%.
I know we're just fantasizing here at this moment, but like if the Knicks pulled that off all the way winning the finals like that against all those matchups, that would literally be the most insane playoff run I think ever.
I think so.
I don't think there's any argument.
No, I couldn't agree more. Maybe other than maybe 2019 Kawhi, I probably would say.
And they also kind of got lucked out with some injuries with the Warriors too.
I know.
So, you know, again, a lot of things have to go right. But yeah, those are my thoughts on the series as a whole.
So I would like to go next. And
that's fair. Go ahead.
Before I start talking about the next series, I would just like to say thank you, basketball gods, for letting Buddy Hield become the savior of this season. Oh my God. Buddy Hield, I know you're 32 years old, and I know you've been in the league for this many years. I know you've gone from team to team. And like I said in the offseason, you'd be the perfect piece to us if we lost Clay, and you have done well, my friend. I'd like to say thank you for making 9 threes, which is tied for the most in a Game 7 history. I would also not like to thank Draymond Green for taking 3-point attempts and shots and everything, and I think he should stop.
I mean, it's been like this forever, but like his shooting form is just the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
His last efficient season was 2017, so.
Yeah. He definitely you know, I gotta be honest, I kinda hate his guts completely. I just do not like him.
He's my
player.
Frenemy. Or, he's my frenemy.
He's just not very likable in the slightest.
And I also just like to say that I predicted the outcome of this series before the playoffs started. I said I wanted the 7 seed so then we can have this matchup between us and the Rockets and have it just be like the 2023 playoffs when we took the Sacramento Kings to 7 games. And that is exactly what happened. So thank you, basketball gods. Now we get into the next series, as it is going to be the 6-seeded Minnesota Timberwolves versus the 7-seeded Golden State Warriors.
Very interesting matchup.
Very interesting matchup, especially for the fact that despite the fact that they're the 6 and the 7 seed, their record, their win-loss record, is like a 4-5 seed matchup. I'm going to hold off on what I'm going to say as far as what this series is going to be. I'm going to give you some points for both ends. I'm going to start with the Timberwolves end. The Minnesota Timberwolves offensive rating, it was 114 compared to the Warriors, which was 113. Defensive rating was 109, while the Warriors was a 110. Per 48 possessions, the Timberwolves was 105 per game. So basically, the average point per game is going to be no more than 110 points. I wouldn't be surprised if nobody scores more than 115. Actually, fun fact, actually, during the season series, the highest point total from either team was the Timberwolves with 116. Other than that, it was less than 116. So we're probably going to have a series in which what it was throughout the first round between the Rockets and the Warriors. The Warriors per 48 possession is a 110. But here's some other benefactors to this. The Warriors won the season series 3-1. Now here's my little concern about that. They haven't played each other since January, so it's a little concerning on my end. 3 out of the 4 games that they versed each other, it was either 10 points or less, especially a 1-point win that was in double overtime against us. So that's also a big thing. And in addition to that, I mean, among like the percentages, I mean, when we versed the Timberwolves during the season, they shot 44% from the field. Whilst if against us, when we versed them, was 45%. So, despite the fact that from a point standard, they shot the ball pretty well, but also scored very low, that tells me that maybe three-pointers are going to matter in this series and everything. But at the same time, it also could be a disadvantage, despite the fact that they're both very good defensively.
Yeah.
As far as some key players, Anthony Edwards. And listen, shout out to Joel Morant. I know this guy. He loves Anthony Edwards and everything. I really do like him. Do I think he's the greatest Timberwolves right now? No.
I mean, that's obviously Garnett.
It is Garnett, only because of what he was able to do from when they started as a franchise and what they turned into.
Honestly, if you get to the Western Conference Finals multiple times, you have already done more than what Garnett's done.
Oh no, 100%.
So I mean, it doesn't take a ton. It's just the fact that Garnett has, like, statistically speaking, been your best player, and he was there for a while and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, Anthony Edwards he's the man. He can get it going.
As far as Edwards' stats goes, this is what's really going to concern me for this series. He averages 26 a game, 44% from the field, 43% from three-point range. Now, you got to realize something. He led the league this year in three-pointers made.
Yeah, I mean, he was attempting them like crazy.
That's also the big benefactor for this series, too.
Yeah, and I mean, there's been games where the Timberwolves just shoot lights out. They've had moments like that throughout the regular season. They had that one time during the Lakers series too, where they were just shooting high and it was going in like crazy.
Yep. And his free throw percentage is a 90%, and in that situation, we cannot foul him when it's a clutch scenario. So,
but I mean, you got Curry on the other side too. So, and he always knows how to make those ludicrous shots when it counts.
Now, here is where things get a little interesting, in my opinion. Julius Randle was the second highest points per game scorer for them at 16 a game, which is, to be exact, 15.8.
Yeah.
He shot 37.5 from the field, 43% from three-point range, 88% from the free throw line, but his two-point percentage was a 35.7%. His two-point percentage.
Wow.
Via ESPN.
That's surprising.
That is very surprising.
You know, I remember his last season with the Knicks. He was he had this really great play style where he was getting into the paint. He was getting little mid-range floaters going and stuff. His three-point percentage was only 30, but he wasn't taking many attempts, so it wasn't even that much of an issue per se. But it's bizarre how that's kind of seemed to flip now. I don't know. That is just very surprising to me. But yeah, it's great to see Randle actually perform pretty well overall. And, you know, I think a big thing with the reason he kind of failed a lot in those previous playoffs is really, he's always just kind of had bad luck. The first time the Knicks back in 2021, he was really the only consistent scorer on that team. So they were just double-teaming him, and he kind of faltered a lot. And then the next few playoff series, he was just injured. And, you know, it was unfortunate, but that's just the way it went for him. And he was just unable to get into a rhythm at all, and then, you know, he was just completely injured one playoff series. So yeah, but they have a lot of players, and Gobert's a good defender, of course. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Randle, here's the thing that I actually think what makes this Timberwolves team very interesting. They really don't truly have a second best player. It's more just Anthony Edwards and then just player by community.
I mean, Randle could be your guy.
Yeah.
And DiVincenzo's also pretty great. He was pretty great in the series, too.
I actually think that this team is very comparable to the 04 Minnesota Timberwolves when they made the conference finals. You had your star player in Kevin Garnett. In this case, you have Anthony Edwards. And then you have two supporting cast guys, where in this case, you had Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell, while for Anthony Edwards, he has Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
Both obviously with that big three or three.
I don't know if it's a big three.
But I know,
it's a three. It's a three.
I can't say combo.
A big one and a... An additional two, yeah.
I guess we could say like that.
That support.
Sprewell and Cassell were more facilitators in the scoring and also kind of veteranship, while as if Gobert and Randle, they're more like a liability with their certain attributes. Obviously, Gobert can shoot, while Randle really was... efficiency, I guess you can probably say. I mean, he'll have his playoff moments, but they're also good with certain attributes, obviously. Randle with his scoring ability and Gobert's defense and defensive rebounding, which is also going to be a huge, huge benefactor in this series, especially for the fact that we did not play Tyrese Jackson-Davis in this series, and we mostly played... The most lineup that I think that I saw throughout this series was Curry, Buddy Hield, Pods, Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green. We cannot have that for this series, okay? We need to stop playing like small ball and start looking at reality as NBA teams, and I agree with what Joel Moran did the other day when he tweeted this out, the big men duo are back in the league. I get it that the small ball has worked for us in the past. But if you really want to make this Jimmy Butler deal actually work, you're going to have to play big men. I don't care if Tyrese Jackson-Davis is a defensive liability. I don't care if Quentin Post can actually do a post-up game defensively. I need tall guys out there. I can't have Kevon Looney and Draymond Green being the only ones out there for 30 to 35 minutes getting defensive rebounds. Like, I get it, like, a lot of these guys are athletic and everything, but we really, really need to come to our senses and be like, okay, we have Rudy Gobert, Naz Reid, and Julius Randle. These guys are pretty tall. We need to get some size in there. Like, if we have a lineup with Tyrese Jackson-Davis and Kevon Looney just for defensive purposes, do that. If we have Quentin Post and Draymond Green, because Draymond can lead the defensive arc while Quentin Post can do his shooting ability and all that, if we're down during the stretch, then that's fine. But when both Gobert and Naz Reid are on the floor, which the Timberwolves have done throughout the season, we need at least Kevon Looney and Quentin Post on that floor. Because if so, we are going to get hammered in the paint. Hammered. Like, I honestly think, like, the differential in rebounding might be the most in the NBA history. I'm going to just go on and say maybe it might be 25-30.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That is how much concerning this series is for me personally, because of the height disadvantage that we have in this series. Now, here's another interesting thing. The free throws attempted as a team for the Minnesota Timberwolves is 22. The Warriors is 23. Both of them were among the bottom when it came to that versus each other. So that tells me that we're either going to get a lot of fouls in one game and not a lot in another game, or we're just going to get kind of a staggering, leveled out type of a fouling game. Mm. I don't mind either one, but also a big benefactor is that field goal percentage when versing the Warriors is 45%, which is actually one of the bottom ends of the league. Which tells me also that I think we're going to play this more of interior defensively than an exterior defensively, because they do have guys that can shoot, like Edwards, Dante DiVincenzo, Mike Conley,
right,
Terrence Shannon Jr. So there are guys out there that can shoot the ball, and if we facilitate it from a perimeter defensively, they're going to have to go inside. And I'm fine if both Randle, Naz Reid, I'm fine if Naz Reid leads the series in scoring for the Timberwolves at like 25 a game and like 80% of it is inside the paint. I'm fine with that. I would rather have Edwards shoot the ball as many times as he can and be inefficient than having Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid scoring points in the paint. I know I just went off on how we need to get rebounds, but I'd rather have the two big men score rather than Edwards, DiVincenzo, and others. As far as the Warriors, and then after this, I'll get into what I think the series is going to be.
Okay.
One thing that I actually found very interesting, I could not find points per game stats for Jimmy Butler, because I even did when he was in Miami. And there's nothing, because I guess during the times that they played, he didn't play at all, or he was during his suspension.
Against the Timberwolves? Yeah, I don't think he ended up matching up against them this season. Yeah.
Yeah. But when Curry plays them, it's really, really good. 28 a game, almost 29, 44% from the field, 45%, almost 46 from three, 41% from two-point range, and 89% from the free throw line. And then I also put in Buddy Hield, because I think his stats are very, very important in this series. He averages 15 points a game, which I think I saw on ESPN was like second or third. His field goal percentage is at 52%. Buddy Hield's three-point percentage is at a 45. And his two-point percentage is at a 70, which I actually think is going to play a very big key in this series, because he has that quick release. And if Edwards or anyone else that defends him gets there too late, he will knock down that three. But I will continue about this series right after these messages.
My pain into purpose is pretty much what I have done to start this foundation.
In August 2020, after the death of George Floyd, Bridget Floyd and other family members established the George Floyd Memorial Foundation in support of the Black community.
It's going to take more than just us as a foundation. It's going to take the community, the world, to make a change.
Fight for racial justice for the Black community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
And we're back.
We're back.
So, continuing on with what I said about Buddy Hield, I mean, obviously, he was phenomenal in that Game 7, and I think another key factor also is that this series is also going to be big effect on Curry, because I saw the way that they played defensively on him, and obviously, I think Joel Moran was wrong for saying this, or somebody from the Pick a Side podcast group. Shout out to them. Great content. Listen to that. You should listen to them. Very, very good on their sports. But they said that the Timberwolves are a better defensive team. I disagree. I think the Rockets are going to be the hardest and best defensive team that Curry will ever meet for the rest of his career. I mean, they were literally locking him up, surrounding him at the three-point line while he was even holding onto the pole. So I think maybe this series will probably have a better slight edge, because I think the defense that the Timberwolves play is more of the Twin Tower type defense, in which they'll have two big men and they'll block shots and all that.
Right.
In this case, I think Pods is going to play a big benefactor, but Heal's going to play a big benefactor, and obviously Curry's going to play a big benefactor in this series.
All right.
But here is my prediction. Just based on how these two play against each other and the way that they are statistically efficient against one another and also during the regular season, I'm going to have to say the Timberwolves in six.
Ooh, okay. I actually kind of completely agree, to be honest.
I as much as a Warriors fan I am...
I thought you said championship run.
I did say that, but I mean, listen.
Yeah, I mean...
We're also derailed with injuries. Curry's got a thumb injury. Butler hurt his butt. And honestly, if the way that we had our lineups throughout the series and games for the Rockets, that's what also I'm going to say. Like, the lineups that we had out there against the Rockets, like, I'm just very lucky enough that we won in seven games. But you got to realize something, too. A lot of the reason it went to seven games wasn't because of our playing. It was because they were much better defensively, and also they had much taller guys.
Yeah, Sengun, by the way, is going to be a really good player.
I totally agree with that.
He might be like the next Jokic in a weird way. I mean, he's not even close to his prime yet. He's already playing at such a great level.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And, I mean, honestly, Edwards' efficiency as far as what he puts up against us is very eye-opening. And I think if he puts those numbers against us in the series, I think we're probably looking at a six-game series.
Okay.
That's just my prediction personally. What I do want, I think we'll win in six games. That's what I want. But as a person who watches basketball, looks at all the stats and everything, and based on all the numbers and everything, the Timberwolves do have the upper advantage against us. And that's why I'm going to go with Timberwolves in six.
Cool. All right. Well, we only got six more minutes so far. How's it feel?
You know, after doing this show for just a couple of months and based on what I have spoken about. I'll tell you this. The post-production is what really kills me sometimes.
Yeah, I know, man. I'm sorry. You work so hard, man. And I really, you do such a great job with this. You've done such a great job, is what I mean. Your analysis has been great. You do so much work, like researching and stuff, and you know, you do a great job.
Thank you for that. And honestly, I actually would probably give the bigger thanks to you. I mean, you agreed to doing this when we first met back in January.
Yeah.
And the original people I had in mind, they didn't pan out. And then once when we started doing the show, I had a lot of promise with our friendship, especially from the sports end. And very thankful for that, and especially for the fact that I found somebody who was willing to come in every week to do the show with me and... talk to me and everything.
It's been great, man. It's been great.
Because, like you said before, you can't do a podcast with as just one person.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Unless you're doing music,
I guess. Yeah.
But from a sports
play the music.
From a sports perspective, this is a 2-man show or more.
I mean, and I have seen an action. I think, but who's that?
Christopher Russo has done one.
Yeah, but
Stephen A. Smith's done one.
It's a bit awkward. But anyway, I was also kind of supposed to do OKC versus Denver.
Yeah, no.
We can honestly just say which
both it's going to be.
It's going to be OKC.
Yeah, it's going to be OKC.
Probably in like 5 or 6 games.
I would say 6 games. I think. This series, I will say one thing real quick. I think this series is going to really tell who deserves that MVP.
I mean, not by the actual voting merit.
Yeah, no, not by the actual voting, but like from a player standpoint. Like, who is actually the better player and who's the MVP of this season?
Yeah, so, definitely.
But other than that...
it's been a good show, man.
It has been a good show. I did offer Tim to see if he wants to do the show to continue it. He did politely decline because he actually has his own show. So make sure that for next semester and for the rest of this time here, you guys tune into his show, which is on Saturdays? Is it on Saturdays at 2 o'clock, right?
Yes, Saturdays at 2, although I actually had my last show. I will be back next semester, though, because I got some more time in college and here at New Paltz. So, yeah, check out Tim's Tunes. That's what it's called, Tim's Tunes. I play a lot of tunes. I talk a little bit in between them, and sometimes I have guests on. So, yeah, it's a fun show. Check it out.
Yep. So, but other than that, that is going to do it for the... CT Sportscast, as this is Colin Buchanan signing off for the final time. Thank you all for listening. If you actually did listen to this show, I usually post it out on YouTube, and obviously I send it to the people who I know. So if those people that I send it out to, if you know them, make sure that those people send it to your friends so I can grow this sports podcasting to a higher level.
Yeah.
Once again, thank you to WFMP Radio for allowing me to speak upon my knowledge and my opinion as far as sports goes. I would like to also thank Val for letting me do this. And I really hope that this radio network stays strong for the next 5-10 years or so. And that is going to do it for me on signing off. Thank you all.
Have a good one.